No, Daddy can't come home yet.
I've told you not to play soldiers, John. Now you've cut yourself. There's so much blood.
That was the telegraph boy, John. Daddy isn't coming home.
By 1960, the British government had become desperate for men to send to the front. In January 1960, the conscription bill was passed. Now, every man between 18 and 41 had to join up. At this stage, certain professions such as miners were exempt. Serious medical issues were also qualifications for exemption. Finally, in the law, there was a means by which men could claim conscientious objection as a reason for not going to war.
Quality. Would you assist those under the civil government?
I do not feel justified
in taking life under any circumstances. I would help the best I could as a civilian.
Would you look to give wholehearted assent to that as the law of the land?
Certainly, for the common good.
I take it. It's for the common good. You object.
You honour the men that are fighting now, but you're not prepared to fight yourself. Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Your application has been denied. Await your call-up papers.
These are the imagined responses of various people witnessing James Vickery's tribunal. They are written by Kaylee Hubbard, Kyra Sinclair, Katie Fellis, Cam Ashby, Sophie Bacon, Lucy Heath, Paulina Chiora, Bree Parkin, Charles Blackton, Ben Chicken.
Mother, this is an absolute disgrace. They don't realise what they are asking. This is not an honour.
Member of the public,
he is a coward and nothing more. He hides behind modern trade, produces metal, says he doesn't supply to the war. Does he really know where his work ends up? People dying every minute. If he thinks that is wrong, why does he not grab a weapon and finish that bastard?
Brother, I stand with my brother. If we do not stand up for what we believe in and throw away our morals for any old reason that is proposed to us, then we will become the liars within our own soul.
Girl in the crowd.
From the age of 4, mother tells us that we need to be subservient to our men and to our country. I would cry,
it's not fair, and why wasn't I born a boy?
And yet, now I look into this man's eyes and I do pity him. I pity his submission. I pity his frailty.
Vicar.
This man has clearly lost any amount of respect for himself or his country that he may have once had. To forsake his brothers on the field of the grounds of religious objection? Unthinkable. He owes it to them as brothers in Christ. And if he cannot see that, then he's a heretic who does not even deserve to fight alongside them. Throw him in the prisons to rot and await hell as he deserves.
Neighbour.
All brethren and male relatives are out there. Why aren't you still cowardly sitting at home in comfort? That's no real man. It's not forever. You will fight for your country and make us women proud. Your daughters too.
So.
Not because they want to fight, but the other children charge and bruise me with rocks. Calling Philip's father's a coward. They've chased me down lane from school, like hounds hungry for humiliation. If I ask my father why he won't go to war, he grows silent and withdraws. Little does my father know, I'm fighting an unseen war.
Sadly, this boy's experience was not unusual to have changed his objective values.
Thank you. Chesterfield Tribunal for exemption for business, domestic grounds, and as a conscientious objector. As a result, he was given 4 months exemption. Mr. Hardy then appealed to the Derbyshire Tribunal, but was unsuccessful. At this tribunal, he asked to go before the Central Tribunal, but was refused. Mr. Hardy was persistent and was eventually spoken to by police constables who accompanied him out of the court. Captain J. E. Tilliard followed him without a sack, resulting in the following event.
Could I have a word, please?
You're not worth speaking to, you worm.
He made a running kick at Mr. Hardy, who turned aside. The kick landed in his thigh. The captain repeated,
"You are a worm! I will make you fight for your country!"
The assault was most unprovoked and un-English. I ask you, Sir Captain J. E. Tilliard, that he must not forget himself and disrespect his office. Captain Tilliard might lack experience what was proper in an English court, but he must be taught that in the transaction of his business, he was not entitled to assault a person who exiled in the law of the land.
This is an accurate account of what happened. I attach the greatest importance to my faith as a conscientious objector in combat and service. I've been a local preacher for 20 years and suffered for my convictions.
You claim the privilege of doing anything sacred, skin.
I use the privilege accordingly by the law of the land.
Was it valid in your view as a conscientious objector?
I'm not very thin-skinned.
At the end of the 4 months, are you prepared to join His Majesty's forces?
I'm prepared to suffer for my principles.
How long did the kick cause you discomfort?
I could hear the effect of the kick for 24 hours and sat down with difficulty.
I witnessed the incident and support Mr. Hardy's story.
I went into the hall of the court to smoke a cigarette after the complainant had left. When Hardy asked to speak to me, I made the reply that had been reported. Mr. Hardy said, "You are no man," so I gently kicked him. Mr. Hardy had been no prejudice against him.
Did you attempt to kick him whilst he was facing you?
No.
Was it more than I might tell if you were content?
No.
What did you do prior to the war?
I was a rancher in Canada. I enlisted as a private in the Canadian contingent and served in France during the war. For this reason, I consider myself morally, if not legally, entitled to assault Mr. Hardy.
I'm surprised that a man who declined to fight for his king and his country would come to court and ask his king and his country to protect him. Captain J.E. Tilliard acted as any man except the conscientious objector would have done, giving Mr. Hardy all but no more than he asked.
We are unanimously dismissing the case.
Albert was eventually court-martialed and sentenced to 112 days hard labour at Wormwood's Road. He was later transferred to Wakefield Work Camp.
Hunter had the hard task of writing to families who'd lost loved ones.
In 1914,
stripped of the right to vote. Their parents never spoke to them again. Their father was a lieutenant colonel with an OBE for his contribution to the Sherwood Foresters. He said,
"It would have been better if they had died!"
Sarah Moon imagines the scene in which John Hunter reaches the end.
Have you ever done it?
Broken the news to someone you don't know that the person you love most in the world has died?
Have you?
Can you imagine doing it not once, or 10, or 100 times, but thousands?
And that's all you do, again and again,
letter after letter,
day after day,
until the pen is shaking, until you always have to start again, because the sheet is strewn with your own bloody tears.
And can you imagine a thousandth letter?
When the tears don't stain that first try, when you sit there, calmly, systematically, as if you're writing a cheque for the bloody butcher.
When your job is to write letters telling the family.
It's like I'm killing them, really, bringing their deaths to life.
Without these letters, there is hope, and it's important heart breaking her.
Could you do it, Father?
Carry on writing day after day. Break mother's hearts again and again. The paper just sits. The ink dries. The world rolls on.
A letter, another letter, another and another.
I am all these letters now. I have written them with my own hand.
My hand wrote these debts.
This hand knows all the lives I've been lost.
The ink round my fingers, the ache in my wrist from writing all day.